Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you saying yarn up strong, you mob, too deadly. Now, public hearing for inquiry into improving the economic self-determination for First Nations Australians. The Joint Standing Committee on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Affairs held a virtual public hearing on 23rd July for its inquiry into improving the economic prosperity for First Nations Australians. I'm going to speak to the chair of that committee, which is a deadly sister, and this deadly sister is a senator, the Senator Jana Stewart. Have a senator on the line. A very good morning, my sister. How are you?
Morning to you and all your listeners there, Trendy Trev. An absolute privilege to join you.
And good to be yarning with you, my sister. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob were you from, Senator.
That is always a very good place to start.
Yes.
So I'm a Muddy Muddy Wamba Wamba woman from northwest Victoria. For anybody who's familiar with Victoria, I'm the Kellys from Balranald, for people who know. But I've got connections to people all along the Murray River and into central Victoria too. So I feel like I'm related to everyone in Victoria.
Too deadly, my sister, too deadly. That's how we go. They got the phrase 6 degrees of separation, but for blackfellas, only 2 degrees.
It can either feel suffocating or like a warm hug, you know,
yeah, true. And they're all at your front door on your payday, you know, but too deadly, too deadly. So quickly before we go into our conversation, Senator Jana Stewart, tell us who you are. Tell us, as a senator, how long you've been there. Tell us your journey and let's talk about that first. Let's talk about the person. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. I feel like I don't really get the opportunity to kind of talk about kind of, you know, who I am in lots of these yarns, so I really appreciate the space that you create here. So I suppose, was driven into politics or drawn to politics out of a desire to really want to make a difference for mob. Lots of my work career has been supporting some of our mob who are doing it the toughest. I'm a family therapist by trade, of all things.
Okay, I was going to ask you that. Family therapist, yes.
Yeah, family therapist.
Ahead, Annie Jana.
one of my very first jobs out of high school was working with Aboriginal kids in out-of-home care. Yeah. I remember when I called my nan to tell her that I got this job, she just laughed. Because I was third generation to start working there. It felt like this is a place that I was always meant to be. And it was really my time working with our kids and our families that made me think I need to get qualified. I need to add some extra tools to the toolkit to be able to work with our families and give them every opportunity to succeed in life.
Mm-hmm.
While I was doing that work, I was kind of thinking about kind of where are the best places that I can be to continue to kind of increase, it sounds like a jargony term, but, you know,
sure.
Like this kind of sphere of influence, right? Where can I continue to increase my impact for mob? It's great doing this. It is really meaningful doing the one-on-one work with families.
Mm.
But how do I get to be somewhere where I can influence the policy? How do I get to be somewhere where I can influence what the laws are or where the funding might go or whatever?
And it comes from government.
It really does. Yeah. And I was working in the public service at the time when the state Labor government, the Andrews government, committed to treaty. And that really, for the first time, piqued my interest in politics because I thought that if this is what good governments can do, they can commit to things that I know that our mob have been asking for a long time, but also that will lead to real pragmatic change for our mob. then I've got to find out what this politics thing is about.
Yes, exactly.
So went on a bit of a journey to figure out if politics was for me, and that eventually kind of meant that as of 2 years ago, I was elected into the Australian Senate as a representative for Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm the first Labor person to mm-hmm. be elected into the federal parliament from Victoria.
Okay. First Indigenous?
From Labor, yes. I'm not the first Indigenous person.
No, no.
But from overall, Labor, but first Labor person.
Lovely, beautiful, fantastic. And so here you are, and also now the chair of the committee.
I am.
Tell us about that seat that you sit on.
Yeah, so I'm the chair of the Joint Standing Committee for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Affairs, which you mentioned at the beginning in your opening.
Okay.
So I took over this committee from the very very respectable and capable Uncle Pat Dodson. He asked me to step into this role. Which, of course, I said yes.
You didn't ask. He told you. You've got to follow the elder. The elder has spoken. Girl, get over
exactly
here, girl.
Right.
Hold his
exactly
reins.
Right.
Hold his reins. These are yours. I'm going to sit down here first.
he's like, shake these mob up, Dort. But so when I took over as chair, it was in a kind of post-referendum, in a post-referendum nation.
Yes.
And one of the things that I'm really interested in is how we get out of this kind of deficit narrative about who we are as a people, and what we contribute to the country. And one of the things that we thought would be useful was to do an inquiry into the economic opportunities and barriers for.
Yeah.
Yeah, for prosperity. How do we grow intergenerational wealth for our mob and for our communities, whether that's as an individual, as a First Nations business, or as a nation,
yes,
a traditional owner group?
Well, when you look at 60,000 years, and we are professors in all industries, you could say, but here we are in the 21st century, we do have black entrepreneurs out there, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, we do.
And like I said, all the industries. So this investigation, you would have found some numbers, percentages. Can you share those numbers with us, please, Senator?
I would love to share these numbers with you. And most of us, I feel like this is a really kind of undertold story of what it is that we contribute. So, you know, our mob are doing incredible things across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Melbourne University did... they do a snapshot every year about the economic contribution of First Nations businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And the snapshot that they released earlier this year, there's data in there that tells us that our businesses generate over $16.1 billion in revenue each year.
Whoa.
Which is huge.
Huge.
It's
a market in itself, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. They pay $4.2 billion in wages. They employ more than 116,000 people, which is bigger than, if you're from Victoria, the equivalent to the size of Bendigo.
Sure.
So these are entire...
well, that's black money couch. Right there, isn't it?
It is. Mm. It is. But it's fascinating to me that the dominant narrative, the kind of stereotypes that exist out there about us aren't about us as being economic partners in this country and contributing to our economy.
We are more so. We are at the table, are we not?
So I'm really keen to really start to see that narrative about who we are and what we contribute change. And I'm really hoping that this inquiry can start to shift some of that narrative. We've heard from some really deadly, traditional owner organisations, from Aboriginal businesses.
Mm.
We've heard from academics. We've heard from government departments about some of the stuff that they're doing, and from individuals as well.
Mm.
So there's such a breadth of knowledge from people
about
what it is that makes them successful and what it is that the federal government can do to unlock some of those barriers to help mob to thrive even more. So there's some really great things coming out.
And when you're talking about great things coming out, we're talking about black businesses, we're talking about black successes.
Yes.
This is a powerful tool for closing gaps, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we've got the solution to our own problems, don't we, Senator?
Well, I think, like, one of the things for me that I always think about is we focus a lot on whether it's the justice system or the child protection system or whatever it is. Mm. And the frame that I think about is, what if we talked about trying to get our young people into jobs instead of talking about how to keep them out of youth justice?
Sure, exactly, yeah.
How do we support them to thrive in our society today? And there is huge opportunity there with the initiatives that the federal government's got underway, whether it's the Future Made in Australia, whether it's the transition to a greener Australia and the kind of the green energy transition.
Yes.
There is absolutely space there for mob to take up.
Yes.
And own those spaces.
Well, I look at here we are in Cairns, and look, the other hat I wear is Indigenous. Well, I'm in tourism, and we have a non-Indigenous company that has invested in Indigenous tourism, a vessel called Dreamtime Dive and Snorkel. So we have Indigenous workers on board the boat there, so taking people, tourists, out to the reef to see Nemo dive and snorkel, but cultural aspect, we deliver cultural aspect, work closely with the traditional owners and permission to tell the Dreamtime story. I mean, Indigenous tourism is a $50 billion industry. So, that's what I'm saying, that we are professors in all fields, all industries, and we need more black successes, don't we, Senator?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've heard from some deadly people like the Jardrung Clan's Aboriginal Corporation is talking about doing a yabby farm here in Victoria and being the biggest yabby farm in the Southern Hemisphere, which is deadly.
Yes.
we've heard from, you know, Peak Body for Native Title organisations talking about how you can resource traditional owner corporations better to be able to take advantage of lots of the federal government initiatives and make sure those benefits are flowing to mob on the ground. Mm. And the Clean Energy Network crew talking about what it is we need to do to make sure that mob are at the table and reaping the benefits from the transition to a greener country. So there is lots of work to do, and I've been so privileged to be a part of these conversations and leading these conversations and celebrating black excellence.
Because
I want that to be the narrative about who we are. You know, whether you're talking about, Senator Briggs launching his Indigenous music label or the launch of Australia's first dedicated First Nations business news service, the Indigenous Business Review, celebrating and kind of bookmarking each of these achievements and milestones along the way is really important.
Of course it is.
And, you know, that's what deadly, stations like yours do too.
Exactly.
You know, they're such an important platform to celebrating black excellence.
Exactly. So with the public hearing, before the inquiry, the outcome, and what do we do with the outcome, Senator?
So public inquiry, so I don't know if it's useful to kind of talk about the committee process.
Yeah, probably boring out there to a lot of people, but, you know.
It is a bit boring, but it is important because because it is how everyday people, like mob, can have a say in these processes that go towards influencing policy, legislation, funding. Committee inquiries happen all the time on any number of things. Like, for example,
it's like a survey. It's like a research to find out.
It's kind of like going out for consultation on legislation.
Exactly.
So almost every piece of legislation goes out for an inquiry. And everyday people are invited to submit their views on that. And when I say submit their views, that can be through something as simple as an email.
Yep.
It could be writing a 20-page document if that's what fills your cup.
There's any number
of ways you can kind of get involved.
But, and you can talk in layman's term as well. Just talk how you feel. Yep. You don't have to be highly educated or talk in big, muscly, deadly words.
That's exactly right. Talk in the language that you feel comfortable in and that you feel best represents your views. Absolutely. I'm a big fan of plain talk.
Yeah, good.
And so the inquiry that I've got underway has been going for a couple of months. It is due to finish at the end of the year. So the report will be put into the Parliament. So in the last sitting week of the year, which is November.
Yes.
So all these kind of hearings along the way, we're kind of going along, getting people's views, building our kind of building that evidence, building the information. All that is so useful to help us figure out what it is that contributes to success. What it is we need to do as a federal government to support Aboriginal people and businesses and nations to thrive. So we've had a couple of hearings already. We've got a couple coming up.
And it's open to the public. And how do people add to the conversation, Sister?
So if you get in touch, like, so you can, it's usually on the Parliament website, but if you follow any of my social media pages, you'll see it on there as well. So you can get me on pretty much any of the platforms. If you just look up Jana Stewart Vic, you can follow me on there. And I'm often sharing the hearing information. And it's also where when the report is tabled, that's a kind of technical term, but essentially that's when you kind of, you're presenting your homework to the Parliament for whatever
the term. Yes.
You're doing your homework, you're saying this is when it's due, you've got to bring it to the Parliament by the due date. From that point, it's public.
Okay.
So it means anybody can access it, and I'll probably share it on my social media after that too.
Yep.
Because it'll be, you know, the result of a bunch of hard work. Lots of people's knowledge and time have gone into developing that.
Yes.
So it'll be great to get to that point in November to be able to share all that.
So confirm Senator Jana, J-A-N-A, and Stewart with a W?
Yes, that's right.
Yep. Okay, Jana
and Vic,
Stewart.
V-I-C.
Vic so for Jana Victoria.
Yep, Jana Stewart Vic is my handle on all my social media.
Okay.
So you can jump on there and give me a follow.
Good.
So that's where, you'll get to keep updated on the inquiry work that's underway. But also you get to see, little bits and pieces about how the Parliament works and what it is that a senator gets up to. And you get to see a little bit about my family and my boys and all that kind of stuff. So you get to see a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff, too, about the person, which is where we started.
Yep, is where you started. Now, you've got two boys, have you?
I got two boys.
How old are they?
Two-year-old and 8-year-old.
Two and eight.
Yep.
Babies.
Babies. So I did my first speech in Parliament when I was 35 weeks pregnant. it's a juggle, but you know, lots of other working mums do the juggle too.
Yes.
So I'm in good company.
Good, fantastic. Girls can do anything, my sister.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Hey, good yarning with you. Thank you very much, Senator. More power to you. This is fantastic, and we need this information.
Yes.
It empowers our people. It speaks for us. It's a voice for us. Especially at the business level, entrepreneur level, you know, and self-determination level, of course, you know. But thank you for your yarn, and big shout out to Hannah. Thank Hannah for allowing this interview to go ahead. We've been chasing each other for yarn, and
we have. And I'd be very happy to come back and have a yarn to you too when the report's released after November.
Good.
So happy to come back and share it with your listeners and your good self.
Yes.
What the recommendations of the inquiry is.
That sounds deadly, my sister. I will let you be. Keep smiling, stay warm, and we will yarn soon, sister.
Deadly. I'll chat to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn, deadly yarn there. That's Senator Jana Stewart, and she's also the chair of the committee, and the committee is Joint Standing Committee on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island Affairs, and they held a virtual public hearing on the 23rd of July for its inquiry into improving their economic prosperity for First Nations Australians. So that is there and there. So you can follow Jana Stewart, Senator, on her different social medias. Jana, J-A-N-A, Stewart with the W, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, Vic for Victoria, Vic. So there it is. Follow her, inquire, just to get information, and also you can add to the conversation. So there it is. And that's what it's all about. And there's Daily Yarn here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your saying yarn up strong. We're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. National Talk Black, yarn up strong, you mob, too deadly.
Here for you, just waiting down under the bridge. gotta keep this thing down low. Yeah, we gotta keep this thing here. Not like a machine, don't nothing. It's just better when the uninformed keeps that fun that way, and it stops us from getting bored. Got the secret, you gotta keep it down low. Got the secret, babe, can't let nobody know. Got the secret, you gotta keep it down low. Got the secret, babe, can't let nobody know.
Yes, very good morning, New Delhi Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country as BB and Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say by calling from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, new treatment hope for Aussies with invisible illness that halves life expectancy. We're talking life-changing modular treatment. Trikafta has just become available for children aged 2+ on the pharmaceutical benefit schemes, PBS, previously costing families $250,000 yearly. Look, we're talking about all different illness. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Deadly Brother, Bradley Dryberg, cystic fibrosis fighter, storyteller, podcaster, and cultural marathon runner. So too deadly this brother, and we got him on the line. And very good morning, Bradley. How are you?
Trev, that was one of the slickest intros I've heard.
That?
You're slick with it, mate.
You like that, brother?
I like it, mate. I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good, brother. Thank you. Before we start, brother, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from, brother.
I'm from the Illawarra region, so the Darawal land down here, and mate, it's a beautiful part of the country. I'm so blessed to be down here, and very much over the course of the last couple of years, Trev, learning a little bit more about my background and my pop side of the family, and sort of started to introduce himself to a bit of the mob down here. And I'm so unknown to us for a few years, until you buy Nan an iPad, I should say, for Christmas, and she starts to do some digging into the family history and starts to meet people and learn. And
good.
So, mate, I'm certainly learning plenty about it this last couple of years, and it's exciting to know more about your background and where you come from.
Yeah, too deadly, brother. Fantastic. Well, as they say, Bradley, we are students for life, so we never stop learning. So more power to you. And look, my brother, you're a storyteller, you're a fighter, podcaster, and cultural marathon runner. But you do have cystic fibrosis. So tell us about this illness or this disease you have. Are you, were you born with it, or explain the paint the picture, brother, my brother, please?
Of course. So cystic fibrosis, I was born with that. It's the most common genetic illness in Australia. So one in every 2,500 newborn babies have cystic fibrosis. And essentially it is, it's different for everyone who experiences it, right? But cystic fibrosis in its, I guess, most known essence is a genetic and progressive lung disease.
Okay.
That also affects organs like the pancreas, the liver, and essentially it's a defective gene that causes a build-up of thick, sticky mucus in the body.
Mm.
And in the lungs, that means the mucus that builds up there becomes a breeding ground for infection and harbours infections that scar the lungs and make the condition of the lungs progressively worse over time, which is unfortunately why most people with cystic fibrosis have a life expectancy of 41. But also for myself, I was born with liver disease, so I've saved myself plenty of money hovering around pubs when I was a younger man because I don't drink. But also my pancreas doesn't produce digestive enzymes to absorb the nutrients like fat and protein from foods. So, you know, Trev, for the majority of my life, I've taken 30 to 50 tablets a day to manage the condition.
Yeah.
But I've been blessed, mate, with a great group of family around me who all believe that my life wouldn't be limited or defined by this, but rather we choose how we responded to the challenges that were placed on me as a young man. And because of that, I'm a healthy, happy lad with a bright future.
With a bright future, but all them tablets you're talking, you must rattle when you walk, my brother.
Mate, I'm like a maraca. I'm a walking maraca.
Shake, shake, shake. Shaking booty. But you're living life to the fullest, my brother. I'm just loving your attitude. And you are a fighter, storyteller, podcaster, a cultural marathon runner. And as I said, you probably pick up pole dancing on the side, cuss.
Mate, I'll tell you what, you said shaking that booty. So, mate,
never know. Watch this space. Yeah, good on you, my brother. So, how old are you, brother?
Mate, I'm 28.
28. So you completed high school, yes?
On the side of the head.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
Starting a little bit of salt and pepper, starting to say I'm looking more like I'm in my 30s than my 20s.
Hey, Uncle Bradley. Uncle Bradley.
Exactly.
So you completed school, yes?
Mate, I finished year 10 at school at the time. I was actually a pretty good student. I was probably blessed that I had a little bit of natural academic talent.
Well, you weren't a good student if you left at grade 10, brother.
Mate, that's it. Well, I had natural academic talent, but I didn't love the academic studies.
Yeah.
But I was blessed to find other things in my life at the time that inspired me and motivated me. So I went to TAFE and done a couple of years as in the fitness space and got my qualifications to be a PT, which I loved because it allowed me to be physical and look after my cystic fibrosis and stay active.
Well, when you're training up people, they got no excuse. Fibrosis. What's your problem? Get in there. Drop down. Give me 20.
Motivation, right?
That's right, exactly.
But Trevor, I was lucky that when I was in the gym training people, I found that probably my best talent was not for training people whilst I enjoyed it, but likely for the conversations we were having along the way. And that encouraged me to lean into a career that, for me, I could continue to connect with people, use my ability to develop deep connections and trust and help people through conversation. And at the time, a really natural route to do that was the real estate space where you're dealing with people every day. And I loved houses and property and had an interest
in
that.
So
I started selling some houses. And then at about the age of 24, I've been on the last sort of couple of years between the ages of 18 and 24. My health had started to progressively get worse and test me with some bleeding on my lungs and some challenges there. And I've fallen out of love with my job. And I just lost, I guess, that life in me. And I say that in a metaphorical sense that I had as a young man where I was always just motivated. I was a dreamer. I was always inspired. I had big dreams for myself. And, you know, every day I'd wake up and bounce out of bed with a smile on my face. And I'd lost that a bit.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so I decided to leave my career in real estate at the time and just go and figure out what I wanted from my life. And that looked like, you know, sitting down what felt very natural and led by curiosity at the time in the podcast. And, you know, 240 episodes later and, you know, probably 30, 40 gigs speaking on stage and sharing my story, I found a passion for storytelling.
Good. Fantastic, my brother. Well, it's you know, like they're 45-year-olds out there who don't know what they want to do with their life, you know. And as we travel through life, and this day and age, when we're talking about the 21st century and industries are being invented, you know, before we even know it. I mean, like in 12 months' time, there's going to be a new industry. It's not here yet, but it'll come, sort of thing. So you've got to be open-minded and find your calling, you know. So, but it's about just enjoying the journey and finding, finding your space, virtually, isn't it?
I couldn't agree with you more, Trev. Well, I think there is a... I had a young man the other day message me on Instagram who listens to the podcast, and he's just finished his HSC, he's 18, and said to me, I'm lost, I don't know what I want to do with my life, what do you think?
Hmm.
And I said, mate, this is the time of your life, because the beauty is you get to figure it out.
Yeah.
There's a great quote that I love from the book The Alchemist, that the possibility of having a dream come true is what makes life interesting.
Yes.
And I think at some point in time we've decided that we're supposed to have all the answers by a certain age, or by a certain part of our life or a certain chapter. And that's just really not the truth. We're ever evolving as humans, and that's the exciting part of life, is we continue to figure it out.
Exactly, exactly. And the other phrase I pick up, brother, and I'll share with you there's two most important days in your life. The first day is the day that you were born, and the second day is when you find out why you were born.
Yeah, I love that, mate. That's perfect. That's right.
I mean, like I said, we just got to find our journey, enjoy the journey of life, and have a plan of attack. But if you go detour, then you're meant to go on that detour. And as you meet people and try different experiences, it's all a part of your journey, isn't it?
Mate, I love that. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, fantastic, brother. So listen, you got brothers and sisters, Bradley?
I do. I've got a younger sister. She's 2.5 years younger than me. She's one of my best mates. We've got a really close relationship and always have. And, mate, throughout my childhood, she was just an absolute inspiration for me.
What's her name?
Her name's Shania.
Big shout-out, Shania. Big shout-out, sister. Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, she's, for me, mate, like, as a young man with cystic fibrosis,
yeah,
I never had any doubt about, you know, who I was or the fact that this was meant to be my path, because as an older brother, all you ever hope for is that your younger sibling strives to be like you, that you can be a role model for them. And, mate, we used to have to buy her strawberry and orange vitamins so she could take her tablets in the morning with me too as a young kid. And, you know, she just always looked up to me and wanted to be like me. And that gave me the courage and the strength to wear my CF as a badge of honour.
Well,
to be proud of the fact that it was a part of me.
Now, that's fantastic, brother, and pardon the pun, but when you talk about and the illness that you have, cystic fibrosis, well, if you look at the last six letters there, you're her bro, she your sis, they're bro sis, you know?
So I like
bring
that.
Down, brother, I just realised.
You're good at riffing.
It's all coming into play now, brother. I can see what's happening in your deadly life, you know? Tell us about thank you, brother. Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, mate, it's literally just born out of curiosity. I was always one of those... always one of those kids that, you know, that phrase where people say, that kid's been here before?
Yep.
I remember hearing that as a young man, like, from the age of six, through my years, I was, you know, always curious what the adults had to say at the dinner parties. I would sit up next to my mum and dad's mates, and I'd ask them questions, and I'd walk up to the older kids at school, and I always wanted to be curious and ask questions and hear about other people's lives and experiences, because it fascinated me that it was different to mine.
Sure.
And... you know, at the age of 24, when I was in search of, I guess, a bit of passion again and to find something that I could sink my teeth into and start to find that love for life again and that passion, I found myself behind a podcast mic, and it started very local here in my area. And then eventually it grew, you know, over the course of 4.5 years, I've continued to nearly every week sit down for an episode of this show and just speak to a range of people. And, you know, it's led me down the path of speaking to, you know, neurosurgeons, world-class athletes and Olympic medalists.
Beautiful, yes, beautiful.
I've spoken to people who have created billion-dollar businesses, people who are thought leaders in their space, or scientists, or, you know, entertainers and artists.
But just, you've even got average punters listening to your yarn, and that inspires them too, you know?
100%. And I think this is what life's about, right?
Exactly.
You learn from each other.
Exactly.
And one of the things, Trev, and I'm still, I don't think you ever master it, right, but I say that the podcast is starting to make a real man out of me, because it's teaching me empathy. The more I speak to people and the more I realise that we all endure different challenges in life, we all have different experiences and views, and I love this idea of being able to different opinions on things, but still respect each other in the process and learn from each other, because that's how things change.
Yes.
Without being able to have conversations, nothing changes. And there's certainly going to be things I'm ignorant to as a young man. I'm only 28.
Yep.
So there's still so much for me to learn, and I want to be able to do that through, you know, respectful conversations on the show. And so it's given me the privilege of doing that for four and a half years. That's quite a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's on all the major platforms, Spotify, Apple, YouTube.
Yeah, beautiful, brother. Too deadly. Well, we virtually wear the same hat, brother. I mean, I'm 58. I'm 30 years your senior, but I run a business called Success with Attitude. So motivational speakers we are, and you can check out the webpage with the acronyms Success with Attitude. That's swa.com.au. Do check it out, brother. But I'm picking up what you're putting down, my brother. And you've been a podcaster, telling a story, yeah, and motivating, inspiring people, talking to people. They say the best exercise for your heart is when you bend it down, lifting somebody up. And by you sitting on that podcast, brother, telling the story and yarn and stretching out, you are inspiring people, and you are moving the people. And bugger the fact that you got cystic fibrosis, you're living life to the fullest, brother.
That's it, my man. That's all you can do, right?
Yeah.
You can only play the card that hands you dealt.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, good yarning with you, my brother. Thank you so very much. Look, stay strong, my brother. We'll be in touch. And how do we find your podcast? What's it under, brother?
So, yeah, you can search A Lot to Talk About on Spotify, Apple, or YouTube.
A lot
and
to
then
talk
if anyone
about.
Wants to connect with the clips and the shorter form of the content, you can just find me by the name Bradley Driver on Instagram or any of these social media pages. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, Trev, I'm working towards what will be my fifth marathon now. I've done one ultra and a couple of marathons, or to try and spread that message that life is not limited or defined by this thing that we face as cystic fibrosis patients, but rather how we choose to respond to those circumstances. And for anyone who's interested in cystic fibrosis, the incredible team at CS Australia are doing so much advocacy work around drugs like Trikafta that are life-changing and life-saving for patients with cystic fibrosis. And we're trying to create a brighter, better future for everyone who faces the challenges that are linked to this disease. And I appreciate your efforts and your opportunity to have me on today, mate. It means the world.
Well, brother, you motivate the motivator. You are too deadly. Thank you very much for your yarn, my brother. Live life to the fullest. We'll be in touch. So a lot to talk about. Yeah, check out the podcast. Your name, of course, Bradley Dryberg. And also we can suss out the webpage for cysticfibrosis.org.au. Good yarning with you, Cuss. Keep smiling. We'll talk soon, Brad.
Can't wait till the next time, brother.
Take care, Brad. Bye-bye.
Thank you, mate. Bye-bye.
Too deadly. Beautiful yarn there. Bradley Dryberg, his name is. Looks so cystic fibrosis. He's a fighter, a storyteller, and podcaster. Do check it out. A lot to talk about is the podcast, and his cultural marathon runner as well. So, look, living the dream and not letting illness stop him. Living life to the fullest. And, look, take a page out of his book, Too Deadly. Have you say yarn up strong? Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black. Too deadly.
Yo. Yo. Keep your head up high. It's all in the heart. One blood, one fire.
We're raised in a valley where our hearts run so free. 'Cause the land will always be here for you and me. 'Cause it's time to stand with pride. So no matter what others say, so keep your head up high. 'Cause there will always be another day.
Where my heart will always be. Streets and beats and families will always bring back happiness and memories. We'll always always have our ups and downs, but for now it ain't really nothing to worry about.
So just chill with me and just bounce to the sound. You gotta make it count, cause this is how the Valley Gang break it down.
Now it's time for our people to stand as one. Jungle and Yalindi and many more to come. I wanna dedicate this to our community. Wiggle, wiggle, where the rainforest meets the sea.
We're raised in a valley, where our hearts run so free. Cause the land will always be here for you and me. Cause it's time to stand with pride, so no matter what others say. So keep your head up high, cause there will always be another day.
Joe Madden, Director of Child and Family in Far North Queensland. My department is responsible for the child protection system here in Far North Queensland. We work to support parents and protect children when there is evidence of abuse and neglect. Children and young people who can't live safely at home rely on other families coming forward to open their hearts and their homes to care for them. Fostering kinship care is the heart and soul of our child protection system. My hope today is to provide a better understanding of the critical need for more members of the community to consider becoming foster or kinship carers. In 2022-23 year, there was an average of 600 approved carer families in Far North Queensland, which is fantastic. However, we really need more. In the same year, around 1,300 children were living away from home in the region. In other words, they weren't able to live with their families. Most of these were First Nations children. Of these First Nations children, 70% were in home-based care, such as foster or kinship care. However, this means 30%, or around 300 children, were not in foster or kinship care. They were in residential care or other care arrangements. For some young people, residential care is the right place for them because of their individual circumstances. This can include complex needs such as disabilities, and they get great care and support. But what we know is there are far too many very young First Nations children in residential care, and this is not what we want to see. We believe they should be living safely with foster and kinship care families in the community. And we believe this would give these little ones a better chance to thrive, learn and grow up strong in culture and life skills. So today we're asking members of the community to not wait to be asked. We would love for you to put your hand up because there are little ones who need you to come forward today. If you can help, please express an interest to us or to the local foster and kinship care agency in becoming a carer. Once you come forward, you will then receive information on the process, what's needed, and the allowances and the support that you'll receive. We know this might seem daunting to begin with, but we can assure you that agencies are there to train and support foster and kinship carers so they're not alone in doing this important job. Today, we have representatives from our culturally appropriate foster and kinship care service at Wootshopperin. Child Safety funds the organisation to recruit, train and support First Nations foster and kinship carers in Far North Queensland. Karen is able to talk more about the work they do and the support that's available for foster and kinship carers.
Here is an important message from Wootshopperin.
Hi, I'm Karen Salam. I manage the Foster and Kinship Care Service of Wootshopperin Health Service. Are you passionate about making a difference in an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander child's life? Across North Queensland, there is an urgent need for more kinship, foster and relief carers for our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. Every day, children are being removed from their homes due to harm, neglect or family crisis. What is Wootshopperin's Foster and Kinship Care Service? Wootshopperin's Foster and Kinship Care Service provides support to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander carers, opening their lives and homes to children in times of need. Our placement support workers work with the community to identify safe, caring and loving homes for long or short periods of time that will also provide strong family and cultural connections. Why be a kinship, foster or relief carer? By becoming a Wootshopperin kinship, foster or relief carer, you will help keep Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and young people safe during a challenging time in their lives. As a priority, and through your guidance, support and care, you will help our kids stay with or continue to be connected to their family, culture and community and reach their full potential. Being a carer is highly rewarding and makes an enormous difference to the lives of our young people. Carers are also celebrated and acknowledged for their dedication at events like the Fostering Kinship Carers Week. We are here to guide you. Wuchopperin's placement support staff works with carers every step of the way to support them on their journey. Carers will also have access to support and become equipped with new skills and knowledge to help provide care for our children. Additionally, carers receive support and training. Our staff are on call and there is a carer allowance which you can access. If you decide to become a carer, you will have a team of Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander workers to help you with any issues and provide strength in times of need. They will be there to celebrate the wins with you and help you move through the challenging times together. What's the next step? Our dedicated team will take you through every part of the process in becoming a carer. So if you are interested and ready to make a difference for our children, call Wuchopperin on 40801080 to learn more.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbrabit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yarn up strong, you mob, too deadly, National Talk Black. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Councillor Raymond Kelly, who's the chairperson of the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council. And great news here, we're talking about New South Wales' oldest Aboriginal land claim finally resolved. And on the line, we have Ray Kelly. Raymond, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. How are you, brother?
I'm well, my brother. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Raymond Kelly, who you are, where you're from? Who's Raymond Kelly, brother?
I'm a Dangati Guri from mid North Coast, New South Wales, into the tablelands of the New England area, east coast of Australia, of course. Currently living in Newcastle, been there forever and a day.
Yes.
50 odd years now.
Yes.
Probably less than 50 odd years, 45 years.
Yes.
So that's who I am and where I'm from. Married there with a number of children and grandchildren now. So.
Beautiful, brother, beautiful. And you're also the chairperson of the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, and we're talking about this fantastic news, oldest Aboriginal land claim finally resolved. So shed some light on this, please, my brother.
Well, the inland area of New South Wales, so, you know, the Great Dividing Range, which runs right up the east coast of Australia, I think you guys you understand what I mean by that.
Yes. So yes.
Over the sandstone corridor in New South Wales to out to Bree Warrina on the flat country there, the community there had lodged a claim back in 1984, and it was over a parcel of land that was very significant to that community at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got stalled, lots of the land claims
exactly.
In New South Wales. We have 38,000 outstanding land claims at the moment to deal with, Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
The government's still yet to deal with. But significantly, this is an important claim because it was the very first claim.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And here we are 40 years later. Now it's come to fruition.
Yes. Mm. Look, the opportunity for that community now to celebrate its, recognition is an important thing. And we at the NewsWalk, New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, will work with them to realise some of their opportunities, do what we can to support them.
Lovely.
But, you know, it's an exciting thing. I'm not sure if you know of Bree Warrina, but Bree Warrina is a place that holds the fish traps.
Yes.
These are large fish traps that are situated in the Barwon River, this is a significant cultural space as well, as indeed all places in Australia.
Exactly, exactly.
Perhaps this is an opportunity for the Bree Warrina communities and surrounding communities to build an economic opportunity going forward, as well as looking and taking care of cultural heritage issues.
Look, fantastic. And when we're talking about land claim, then we're talking about cultural being operated on the land, and also opportunity for business entities too, you would think.
Yes, well, what we're seeing right around the country, but certainly in New South Wales, we're seeing there's a revitalization of cultural output in terms of performance, song, language, dance. Really what it is just an assertion of our rights and roles as custodians, as caretakers of the land, to be involved in the protection of, all of the good things about our country.
Yes.
And so what we're seeing is that, people are developing tourist destination places. Certainly, obviously, with the fish traps, Brewine has got one in spades. We've got all the artesian bars, spas, and the water around in that space. So,
yes.
Really, this is a really important place, and particularly because we're trying to live through, I suppose, the sporadic development or the wildfire of cotton in some of these communities. So, how do communities find resilience and build opportunities? Well, here's an opportunity for us right now to realise some of that. So we're very excited for the community of Brewarrina.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, congratulations to the mob, and look, great talking with you, Raymond. Thank you very much. And look, we'll keep in touch, and we'll keep an eye on this. And look, success breeds success. It gives us another opportunity. We have another win as black people in this country, and we need to celebrate and work closely with the people who celebrate. It empowers all of us, doesn't it?
Thank you very much, Trevor, and you're absolutely correct. It's time for us to celebrate those wins, hard-fought wins.
Mm.
And to acknowledge and recognise all of those great champions that have led the way for us, mate.
Councillor Raymond, thank you very much. All the best. We'll talk soon.
All right, Trevor. Bye-bye, bro.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn, Deli Yarn, Councillor Raymond Kelly from New South Wales, Newcastle, also chairperson of the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, and a beautiful yarn and talking about New South Wales' oldest Aboriginal land claim finally resolved, and that's the Brewarrina Aboriginal Local Aboriginal Land Council. And thank you to the New South Wales Land Council, Aboriginal Land Council, has got it to fruition. So there it is. Have your saying yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black. We're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on Yidinji country, BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Too deadly.
Dikati, Dikati, Rakane.